You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. Today on the show, Bryce Simon is in the building. We're here. We're going to talk about five different topics, maybe six if we have time. Bryce has a heart out here in 92 minutes. So I promise you, we can't go longer than that on this show. We're going to start with Bryce's beloved Detroit Pistons. I'm making him do it just to share for people. This is not something Bryce wants to do. This is something I'm making him do. I just want to be clear with everybody. Literally at the top of our note sheet that we have going into every episode, Bryce has put a note saying, not Pistons. Please do not talk about the Pistons, basically. Unfortunately, I'm going to make him talk about the Pistons because they did a trade today. We'll talk about the details on that momentarily. Then we're going to move to the Houston Rockets. We're going to talk about some of the interesting things that I think they're doing on defense with Alperen Şengün, some of the rotational questions, everything like that. I just really want to talk about the Rockets because I've wanted to for a while, and they're in the middle of this weird run recently where they've played well sometimes. Like, they beat the Bucks literally, like, I think a week and a half ago, and then takes a late bucket to beat the Detroit Pistons, and then, you know, they get the doors blown off of them by the Celtics. Obviously, it's a weird team, and like, I kind of think that like 19-19 is probably right for them given where they are currently, but I would just want to kind of dive into everything I'm seeing there. We're going to talk about Atlanta a little bit and just like how messy that looks. They got absolutely blown out by the Washington Wizards, and whenever that happens, there is a full-scale crisis I feel like worth discussing. We're going to talk about the Kawhi Leonard extension, what that means for the Clippers moving forward, as well as what that means NBA-wide. I think that's actually a really interesting discussion point. Kawhi was one of the critical free agents that could hit the market this year. The Clippers have been so good that it would have been a surprise if that would have happened anyway. But worth discussing kind of what all of this means. Finally, we're going to do NBA Draft Prospect of the Week. We're going to talk Jalen Tyson out of Cal, a guy that I'm really excited about. I think Bryce is also pretty excited about him.
Yep.
Look, to spoil this at the top, I have a first round grade on Jalen Tyson right now.
Same.
I think he looks like a really, really interesting prospect that has probably not gotten enough publicity. I had him top 40 on the most recent big board I did, like coming into the new year. Like, I think I did that thing in December. So I've been on Tyson for a minute here, but he just continues to get better and better. Some of the stuff he showed against Colorado particularly, I think, was super, super impressive. So we're going to talk about all that. But first, Bryce Simon is here. Bryce, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, Sam? Yeah, I mean, listen, I was joking about the Pistons thing, mostly because we recorded our pod this morning. The news broke as we were recording, which is quite literally the luckiest thing that could have happened, because if we would have finished the pod and then the news broke, we had a guest on, all of that, it would have been a disaster. And then I recorded right after that on a Wizards pod with my guy, Matt Moderno, Believe in Wizards. Amazing. I love him and enjoy it, but I've already, you know, talked about this for a couple hours today. So no, it'll be good. I'm interested to get your perspective. I've had a chance to think about it a little bit more. So, and I think we even want to go beyond the trade with the Jaden Ivey, Monte Williams quote.
Yeah, we do, unfortunately. Look, you've probably spent way too much time on what is essentially an inconsequential NBA trade.
Sure.
But we're going to talk about it regardless here, just because some of the things that I think it says more about what both of these teams are planning as opposed to what it means now. So the Detroit Pistons traded Marvin Bagley and Isaiah Livers plus two future second round picks, to the Washington Wizards for Danilo Gallinari and Mike Muscala. Do you know what the first thing I thought of when I saw this deal was, Bryce?
What?
I texted it to you. Like, the
I didn't know that when it happened. I found out after it happened.
Yeah, the funniest piece of this by far is that, and look, like, I don't think there's like anything in this. I just think it's funny given all of the, you know, hoopla around Arne Tellem and the Tellem family and everything, is that Danilo Gallinari is represented by Michael Tellem, who is at Excel and is Arne Tellem's son. Just a funny, you know, probably like there's something there, but regardless, it's funny to note. We'll talk about something that I think could be critical there long term. So my initial reaction to this was almost to be annoyed, because if I was a Pistons fan, like, I'd be frustrated by this, right? And, you know, you can tell me how you feel in a minute here, Bryce, just because, look, they gave up, you know, multiple picks and Trey Lyles to get Marvin Bagley, and now they're basically giving up 2 second round picks to get off of the Marvin Bagley contract for this offseason, right? Because what Marvin Bagley's trade does for two expiring deals, it creates potential for more cap space, because both Gallinari and Muscala are on expiring deals, basically will create $12.5 million extra in cap space this summer, because that's what Marvin Bagley's deal is, right around that mark, for this coming off season. And then I stopped and I thought about something I always talk about in this podcast, which is you can't get locked into a sunk cost, right? The Marvin Bagley original deal is a sunk cost. If you're thinking about this from the perspective of building a team, the worst thing you can do is just get locked into your guys and not think twice and just continue to move forward with that. Honestly, being able to get off of that Marvin Bagley deal for the cost of only 2 second round picks, and frankly, taking the Isaiah Livers club out of the bag, quote unquote, for Monty Williams, because he continues to play Isaiah Livers, and Isaiah Livers brings very unsuccessful minutes to an NBA court, I think this is a smart deal for the Pistons. Like, look, we can't remove it from the context of everything else, and I think the context is really important when discussing another point I want to bring up after I get your take on this. But in a vacuum, this deal is smart, I think, for the Pistons, and makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a vacuum, the hard part is we know that outside of the vacuum, I think to go to something you talk about is the process around this whole experience with Marvin Bagley was just bad. You traded away assets to bring him in. Okay, that was okay. I can't say that I was super upset about that. Although, like, you see what Trey Lyles does as a rotation player on a top five team in the West right now, and you're like, hey, you know, a team like the Pistons who could use a guy that just is a good quality rotation player and spaces the floor, you know, but at the end of the day, you go and you try that with Bagley. The problem with the process was then you overpaid for him. Then you traded a former first round pick for James Wiseman, who then was taking Marvin Bagley's minutes. And then you had to trade assets to get rid of Marvin Bagley on the end of it. So yes, I agree with, here's what I've said is I hope that whatever has gone on, the only way I have confidence in this moving forward is that Troy Weaver, the front office, whoever's been making the decisions, has learned from mistakes, is willing to correct them, willing to grow and expand and whatever. And if this is an indictment of this, if this shows that like, hey, we made a mistake here, we need to get off of it, we need these expirings. I will say that Amari quickly, even as all of this was happening, Amari Sankofa, the second Pistons beat writer for the Free Press, he said, this is like the foundation. This is the first step of what should be more moves. And so I'm trying to hold on to the fact that this may have set up some other things and not trying to rush to too much. I also like those second round picks. I haven't fully been able to grasp what they are. There's weird, like, the least and most favorable, but one of those may be the Pistons' own, which in 2025, which could be a pretty high pick. So those aren't like nothing into the second round picks from what it looks like right now. Just wanted to put that out there. Although, like, say, it's very convoluted with those picks a little bit.
Yeah. So I agree with you that this is like the precursor to moves for both of these teams, frankly. On the Pistons side, Danilo Gallinari and Mike Muscala have been two of the guys I've kind of been looking at as like potential buyout candidates, right? I've kind of been assuming that that's where this ends. The big thing with the Gallinari move is that Gallinari, unfortunately, you know, signed this deal with the Boston Celtics and never got to play for the Boston Celtics, right? If he had been bought out by the Wizards, he wouldn't have been able to play for the Celtics. Like, they couldn't have bought out Gallinari, the Wizards, and then Gallinari been able to sign for Boston under league rules. But now, because he's been traded somewhere, and then there's the potential for him to get bought out, he certainly has not been bought out as we're talking right now. If he is to be bought out, he can go sign with Boston now, which Boston needs depth. I'm not going to sit here and say that Gallo is like some playoff difference maker at this point. And I think they would need to sign or trade for somebody else depth wise. But I think that Gallo could, in theory, make some sense there as like a bigger guy who can shoot in some respect. Mike Muscala has been in Boston before, floor spacer, et cetera, et cetera. Like a couple, both of these guys like kind of make sense for Boston, and neither of them were capable of being moved back to Boston unless they were traded. So that piece of it was interesting to me. The second piece of it is if you buy players out, if you're the Detroit Pistons, you create roster spots and you create flexibility to potentially bring back two guys for one guy, three guys for one guy in a trade. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Pistons have many opportunities to trade one for three, one for two, et cetera, but it just creates more flexibility. It also creates flexibility to potentially convert some two-way guys like Stanley Amude has had some moments this year. I don't really hate the potential for him to get converted, to be honest. Then you can bring in another two-way guy. Like, it brings up real potential avenues for improvement and to bring in different types of talent at the end of the day. So that, go ahead, Bryce.
No, I was just going to say, go ahead and finish. I was just going to say, I want to make sure that also the trade exemption came up. They got like, it's a little less than six, but that is part of this as well. So again, as the chat is saying, like, at the end of the day, it's still bad that you had to get rid of draft capital to get off of Marvin Bagley. I get it. I fully support and agree with that 1,000%. I'm just honestly right now, I'm still just trying to provide the context around what all was created. And as you're saying, some potential options and things that could be used moving forward. Because as we know, most trades, even though we want instant reactions, instant win loss, there's a lot of things that have to happen after that to decide whether it was or not, or, you know, was it a good move? What is it? The start of something else.
Worth noting for the Pistons as well, that $5.7 million trade exception that they create in this deal is actually like a potential value add to them because they do not currently have a trade exception available to them. Now they will lose that trade exception if they end up using cap space this summer, which, again, it seems like that's where this is going. And given all of the context that we just outlined regarding what Troy Weaver's process here, you can't let Troy Weaver make this decision. You can't let Troy Weaver make the decision on who to pay because this free agency class is not strong. And we are setting up for a circumstance where the Pistons are getting more cap space to potentially overpay in free agency to do stuff. Now, you can use cap space in a lot of different ways. You can, you know, if you want to in the summer, trade Jaden Ivey for a star and just take the guy into cap space and everything like that. Hypothetically, I'm not saying that's happening. I'm just saying that, like, you cannot let Troy Weaver make this decision, I think, based off of the Marvin Bagley deal to create cap space is kind of the epitome of why you can't let Troy Weaver make the decision to go pay somebody else like Marvin Bagley.
I think that's what we're going to get, though. And this was secondhand, so I'm definitely not reporting this. I haven't read the article yet, but I believe James Edwards III may have written this, that it looks like maybe Weaver was going to get the deadline in the offseason. Now, again, this was secondhand. I haven't read it yet, so I absolutely do not want to put words in or, you know, words down that James did not type or write, because James does an amazing job. But I mean, my thing is, if you're going to fire Troy Weaver, you should have done it before 4 weeks before the deadline. And so I think he's at least going to operate the deadline. And I don't know. I think I'm of the mindset that we're going to see Troy Weaver operate the deadline in the offseason at the very least.
That is something if that's going to happen. That does not make sense to me. For the Wizards, I'm a little bit surprised that they decided to take on the Bagley deal, but you know, like if one of those second rounders could be quite valuable, like Bryce is saying, in terms of the protections, I'll take a look here momentarily. I sort of understand it. Like it's only 1 year after this one. It's $12.5 million. They are, I believe, over the cap moving forward. And again, as we just discussed, this is not really the off season where you want to go like crazy in free agency. So, you know, taking on this money makes some sense. And look, like the Wizards kind of need another big man body, especially if they're going to move Dan Gafford, who is somebody that I think could end up getting real value on the market. Gafford, like I look at teams like the Rockets, I look at teams kind of across the league, you know, the Mavericks need like another body potentially as a center, not necessarily as a starter, but just as a good 20 to 25 minute per game guy that can come in, give you rim protection as a shot blocker, rim run, finish at the basket, do all of the simple things that Gafford does really well. If you're going to move him, you need to have like a replacement body at the very least who can like play center. So this to me could be the precursor to something like that. If they decide they want to go down that route, they don't have to make a decision on Gafford. He has 2.5 more years left on his contract. But if they decide that, you know, somebody's going to pay a first round pick for Daniel Gafford, be it a late first rounder or whatever, it's an interesting concept to me.
Yeah, to me, this is good process by the Wizards, right? You have two guys on expirings that are probably not a ton of value. Like we're talking about the Pistons just buying them out, right? So you get a guy, yeah, you get an extra year of the Marvin Bagley money, but is that really hindering what the Wizards are going to do this offseason? Bagley has shown some signs, at least offensively. I thought he had times where he played decently well, and I've referred to him as a fifth big, a quality fifth big, which I'm counting both the five and the four in that. So I don't even know that he's like on your two-man depth chart, but he's then the fifth guy that when somebody's out or injured or foul trouble, you can bring him in. He has some nice soft touch, those type of things. You know, maybe a change of scenery for Isaiah Livers. He finds whatever we all thought he may have had. I know it's come out that multiple people talked about how him and Jordan Poole roomed together at Michigan. Maybe being with an old friend from college is going to help him find something. But at the end of the day, if neither of those guys work out at all, you got 2 second-round picks for 2 expiring 32-plus-year-olds that, you know, weren't really making a huge dent in anything anyway. So I think for the Wizards, you know, we talk about good and bad process. This felt like good process for them in terms of what they did, even if it's not any sort of needle moving move for them in their rebuild.
So keep talking. I kind of have an idea here on a deal that I'm going to share that I've been kind of sharing with people. So give me 1 second.
Yeah. So for the Pistons, it's really interesting in terms of, again, as soon as this came out and Omari started doing his things and whatever, and I think he've even written an article since then for the Detroit Free Press, that this was just the table setter, I think was the words that were used for what was going to happen next for the Pistons. And so one thing that's interesting to me is, are they going to, I think everybody thinks they're going to wait till the offseason. Do they try to make a move here at the deadline to start moving this thing forward? I don't even know if it's about wins this year, but instead of taking money and cap space into the offseason where maybe you make a mistake trying to sign a free agent, you just make a trade that makes sense now. And they have a ton of expiring money on the books with these two guys, along with the other players they already have.
So I agree with you. Like if I was them, I would probably be trying to make a move now instead of trying to make a move in free agency. I think that just makes more sense. So this is kind of my idea here on a random deal that I think you can line up that makes some sense across the board. So the Rockets are in need of a backup center pretty desperately. Daniel Gafford makes sense for them in a lot of ways. Bigger body, kind of an interesting compliment to Sengun. You know, makes $13 million, I think, over the next couple of years. That's solid. They moved Jock Landale, who has not been very good for them, expiring contract, moved Delano Banton. You know, the Celtics moved Delano Banton to the Wizards. You know, interesting, bigger framed guy that maybe could be something eventually. The Celtics then would get Jae'Sean Tate, a guy that I think could really help them defensively. I think he really fits with their bench units. They have all the shooting in the world. Guys like Peyton Pritchard, Al Horford, Sam Hauser, and then typically they play those bench units with like Jason Tatum specifically. So you could do that. You could mix and match the bench units with all sorts of shooting. Tate's lack of shooting, I think, would be really managed well in Boston. They give up like what's essentially going to be the 30th overall pick to do that. You know, the Rockets maybe could give a second rounder to Boston if you wanted to do that. The Wizards get a late first round pick then to, you know, move Daniel Gafford to the Rockets. The Celtics are very limited in terms of who they can go out and get. Like, they really can't go out and get somebody above a certain price point. Like, it has to be, you know, $7 million or cheaper in terms of what they can match trade wise. So Tate fits in that billing. They move three guys at the end of the bench, not really playing much. Rockets get Gafford for, you know, Jock Landale, Jae'Sean Tate, and a second round pick. That feels like a win. Wizards get a first round pick for Daniel Gafford, which feels like a win. The Celtics get one of the few guys that they can actually like make work under their cap sheet, and somebody who fits them defensively, gives them some more energy off the bench, gives them another rotation player, just essentially for the 30th overall pick in terms of what that looks like this year.
Yeah, I see some people, and I think in general we're going to get some pushback in terms of like, is Jae'Sean Tate worth a first round pick? You know, and you're also
honestly probably not. If I'm being completely transparent, probably not.
But what you're saying about the Celtics in terms of what they can actually do, that changes the equation for them, right? In terms of they can trade a first round pick, but they can't go acquire somebody worth more money.
Yeah, that's right. So. No, I am very intrigued to see what the Celtics do, because I do think that they seem like they want to make a move in that respect, at least in some respect, right, to go out and find another bench player. And there are just limited options in terms of what they can do because of the price point. Like, another thing I thought of was like, maybe they go and try and take a flyer on like one of the younger Memphis wings and John Concher or something like that. They can get two for the price of one, maybe, for that late first rounder. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing things at the wall and seeing if they make sense. But I think you can make a case that like a Gafford, you know, Tate, Wizards, you know, draft capital deal makes a lot of sense for everybody involved and kind of ticks boxes for everybody involved.
Well, I like that for the Rockets, right? Because it changes the alignment of their roster, where you get, as good as Jae'Sean Tate has been, you get him out of there, where you have this emergence of Cam Whitmore, who's been really good. It opens up minutes for him. You're obviously starting Dylan Brooks, but now you get a backup big who I really like, Daniel Gafford. Like, I know he's completely different than Alperen Sengun, but that's not always the worst case when you can bring in somebody that offers something a little bit different for those minutes. And so that makes sense for the Rockets. Like you said, the Wizards, you know, if you get any sort of first round pick for Gafford, I think that's a win if they're ready to move off of him. And then, yeah, like you said, for the Celtics, I think the Celtics are already just at 14 roster spots. But again, that would open up more roster spots for buyout candidates and stuff like that in that situation. Yeah. Like, if you traded for Jae'Sean Tate, you got Danilo Gallinari. If he gets bought out, all of a sudden that second unit that we've discussed at length starts to round into form, and maybe you're a little bit more confident in that. I really like Jae'Sean Tate. I think he's a really good player, especially on a really good team. I think the things he does really stands out well.
And he's on a like awesome contract for next year too, at $6.5 million, which I think is less than what he's worth, frankly. And if you're Boston, like, I don't know if he's worth a first round pick, but he's worth more than $6.5 million in cap space. So like, if you're Boston, you get a guy that can help you for the next 2 years, which is more than a expiring kind of player. He's also extension eligible this summer, so maybe you could get a couple of years tacked onto that. I think that it's just hard. Like, you know, Pedro brings up Tate was really good in his rookie year and just okay ever since. He's good, but I think the Celtics would look for more. I agree. It's just, I'm telling you, like, I'm trying to find something that makes sense, because of how constricted they are cap wise, it's just really hard to find something for them. So maybe, you know, they traded for all of those seconds. Like maybe Boston fans would feel better if, you know, you make it like 4 seconds going to Washington because they did all of those deals during the trade or during the draft last year to get those second round picks. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to find a guy that I think
real quick on Boston. And part of the reasons it's hard, Sam, is because of where their contracts land. You're not trading any of the top five. Horford's at 10 million. You probably aren't trading him because then it becomes a lateral move. You're probably not trading Peyton Pritchard because that's again, a lateral move. That's a guy in the rotation that you're trading. Yes. And even if you did, he's only at 4. You go beyond that, Cornette's at 2.4. So like, that's where it's hard to get to the money.
And again, like people will laugh at this when I say this, they kind of need to keep Luke Cornette of the Kristaps potential for injury thing. And because Al Horford is deep into his 30s at this point, Cornette's been like somewhat useful for them this year. So I think they kind of need to keep him too, which sounds, I get it sounds weird on its face, but you know, I think the value of getting 400,000 extra to move in a deal is not exceeded by what Cornette has done. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. I mean, they essentially have 4 $2 million contracts to trade: Brichette, Svee, Stevens, Banton, because again, you're not going to move Sam Hauser. All these other guys you kind of want to keep in the rotation, or if you send them out in the trade, unless it's a huge upgrade, it's just not really worth it because these guys are part of the rotation we're already talking about. So I think that plays into a lot of what we're talking about, where yes, Jayshon Tate on face value may not be worth a first round pick, but it's about, okay, what do the Celtics need? Does this get them where, you know, they feel much more comfortable, help them win the championship? And is that worth, as you said, the 28th, the 29th, the 30th overall pick in this draft?
And like another option is potentially like maybe, so the Rockets, I think, have 2 or 3 second round picks. They did a deal like this with Eric Gordon last year, where like they essentially moved pick 31 for pick 30 or for whatever.
You're whatever essentially it was, trading back
to move up to pick 19 or pick 20, which is the one that they used to get Cam Whitmore. So like maybe it's as simple as you move a second rounder back to Boston. So it's essentially you're trading back, you know, 15 slots or whatever to get Jayshon Tate, as opposed to like completely moving out of the draft entirely. Like it could be something like that.
I like that. Yeah, for sure.
So, okay. Let's move on. We've spent enough time on this deal. Let's go to the Rockets now. Like this is okay, just a natural progression, I think, to move to the Rockets. The Rockets right now, this is going to be kind of a general Rockets talk because I'm fascinated on where they're going to go. They are 19-19. They're 6th in defense, 21st in offense. That's basically been pretty steady throughout the course of the year. Really good defense. Offense has been, let's call it hit or miss, depending on the night, right? They started great at 6-3. They basically kind of held steady since then. They went 9-9 in their next 18 games after that. Following back-to-back wins against Dallas and New Orleans, they were at 15-12. Been a bit of a struggle. They've only won 4 of their last 11 games. Those 4 wins were against the Pistons twice, the Nets, and then the good one against Milwaukee, which I think was every reason to be like, okay, maybe this team like could be a real play-in, you know, playoff team that, you know, wins a play-in tournament kind of situation. The losses in those 11 games: Pacers, Suns, 76ers, Wolves, Heat, Bulls, Celtics. The Celtics and Wolves games particularly were blowouts. I feel like when I watch the Rockets, I'm watching a team that I'm really excited to watch, and I'm really excited by the progress they've shown. I do want to note as well, as 57 Otis says, like Tari Eason and Dylan Brooks have missed quite a bit of time recently. They have had some lineup in and outs, no question. That's absolutely right. It does feel like a team that is still really growing and is still trying to just get it all together a little bit. And given how deep the West is, I don't know that they're going to be a play-in team, but I don't know that I care about that, I think is where I'm at, given the very clear growth and progress that they have shown over the course of this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I like, and maybe why I wasn't as high on their summer whenever they signed Fred VanVleet and they signed Dylan Brooks, is I'm like, man, these guys are going to come in and they're going to take all of the offensive role and you're not going to find out about your young guys. Well, that's not at all what's happened. We've given Dylan Brooks some flowers for not coming in and taking a ton of shots. So what I like is, you've talked about this with the Pistons, right? They need to find out what Cade Cunningham, what I like is we're finding out what Alperen Şengün is, what Jalen Green is or what Jalen Green is not. We're finding out about Jabari and Tari Eason. And that's being helped and aided by these veterans. So I think it ended up being really good. Şengün is still first in field goal attempts. Green is second. Jabari fourth. Tari sixth. So like you're still getting, the hierarchy is still where you would want it. And every time I watch a Rockets game, they talk about Fred VanVleet and the culture and what he brings in regard to that. We know Dylan Brooks brings a certain mentality that I think is good for these young guys in terms of competing and, you know, a positive, confident mentality. So I think this has ended up being way more than what I thought it was going to be. Cause I was nervous, like, man, well, if Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks are just going to lead them in points and field goal attempts, I don't like that. That's not at all what has happened. We've seen Şengün shine. And again, maybe people are upset with what Jalen Green has been this year, but at least you're finding out, like, you know, because it can't be, well, he doesn't have a point guard or he doesn't have a wing defender and he's having to take defensive matchups. No, they've put Jalen Green in a position to succeed. And now it's like, can he do it or can he not?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good way to phrase it. I want to start beyond that with Şengün, because I think it's by far the most important place to start. As you mentioned, like finding things out about who you have and what you have on the team. The most important thing they found out is that Şengün is an all-star. I don't know if he's going to make the all-star game this year. He's going to make the all-star game multiple times moving forward into his career. He is a stud. He is awesome in terms of his capability of finishing around the basket now. He is awesome as a overall playmaking hub in the center of the court. And I think that's kind of where I want to start. His ability to make plays in the center of the court, either in pocket pass situations for Fred VanVleet or entry passes, you know, at the top of the key or at the elbow, things like that. It is the best offense that the Rockets can run. And it is absolutely ridiculously impressive that this dude that is 21 years old is able to create in this way. So I grabbed a couple of clips in terms of what I'm talking about here. So the first one here is, I just kind of want to show how well the Rockets spaced the court around Şengün. And I think that this is something that is totally different from like the Silas era Rockets, right? Ime's spacing has been so much clearer and smarter and crisper. And part of it is because that they have guys like Fred VanVleet, who you absolutely have to guard at all times. They have guys like Jabari Smith, who is knocking down shots from three this season. You know, they have guys that are real offensive threats around the court, which means that it just creates oceans of space for Şengün to operate in that middle of the court area. So on this one, it's just an entry pass, right? Like it's setting up almost like a Spain pick and roll. It seems like you're coming up. Shangoon's going to come up and set this screen here on Jaden Ivey. And you can see Reggie Bullock is coming up behind him to potentially do like a screen the screener on the roll situation, a Spain pick and roll action. Instead, what they decide is Alperen just gets the ball above the 3-point line. And you see Reggie Bullock vacate the area. You see Fred go away from him. It's clear that their spacing principles are just so much better this season in the way that they're thinking about basketball. And part of this is having guys like Reggie Bullock over 30, having Fred VanVleet has played more minutes in the NBA than anybody probably over the last 5 years because of the way Nick Nurse used him. So you create the situation where Alperen Şengün, if you ask him to drive, he is so fluid and capable with the ball in his hands that he is going to find a way to score or to create an open shot where you have to collapse down on him in some respect. So this one here, it's just so ridiculously impressive to see, okay, I'm just going to go spin, spin back, get it through, for a shot. And because he's capable with both his right and his left hand finishing around the basket with those little touch finishes, it's just really hard, even for somebody like Jalen Duren that has a real size advantage on him, to be able to do much of anything in this circumstance. So it's the oceans of space that they put him in, the different ways that they utilize that space. So I grabbed another one here too. This one, I just kind of attached this one because of the previous Monty Williams quote about Jaden Ivey that we didn't get to in the Pistons section. Hey, yeah, we haven't tried this guy at point guard as much. Someone on the organization like pointed that out to me. No shit, Monty. Like, come on, man. What are we doing? But like, look at Jaden's speed, like just explodes by Reggie Bullock. Just absolutely absurd in terms of his flexibility, burst, everything like that. But now we're going to get Alperin as the trailer here. They're going to set like a sweet little one, almost, what do we want to call this? Like a 1-3, given that Reggie Bullock, I think, is the three, because I see Jalen Green in the corner there.
Yep.
So we're going to come through. We're going to set like a 1-3 ball screen here.
Get the switch.
Yep, you get the switch. And now Şengün is just operating as the trailer in oceans of space here, right? This is just fantastic offensive design, I think, where you have Şengün set like almost, I don't know, what do you want to call this? Like a veer kind of screen for Reggie. It's almost a flare maybe for Reggie to like come. Well, Reggie almost takes it as a curl, but I would assume that Reggie's going to go back to the wing 3-point line there.
Well, Jabari does a really good job, Sam. This we talked about this with Jared McCain. Watch what Jabari does here. This is why relocation is so vital to me. I would be Jabari. It's not super crazy. It's just subtle. Jabari relocates to the wing and he doesn't get the ball. But by him relocating to the wing, it allows Reggie to get to the corner, because if Jabari was still in the corner, Reggie would be hanging out in the dunker spot, which what is Reggie Bullock going to do in the dunker spot? So that subtle relocation just helps with overall team spacing.
No, 100%. And honestly, it's something that I think Jabari probably wouldn't have done last year.
Sure.
Which is growth. Like, it's huge growth for this 20-year-old who's a killer shooter to be able to understand, hey, instead of Reggie taking this as a flare, he's going to curl around this action on the opposite side from Alperin. If he's going to curl around, eventually he's going to either, you know, get this ball, rolling to the rim, or he's going to have to relocate to the corner. It's going to have to be one of the two. So I'm just going to lift. I'm going to do the easy thing. I'm going to lift here. I'm going to relocate into the open space. And again, all it does is just look at this open ocean of space for Şengün to be able to operate in.
And Jalen is doing it on the bottom as well. So Fred drove into the lane, kicks to Şengün. Jalen is on the strong side. So here after Fred, it doesn't happen super fast, but now Jalen is lifting to the wing. Fred's getting back out to the corner. And it just, and here's the other thing that should be like, you have Jalen Green who has gravity. You have Fred who shoots almost 40% on 8 attempts. Bullock, Jabari Smith Jr. who's at 38% on 4.5 attempts. The Pistons aren't a good defensive team, but that's really good floor spacers. You can understand why they're saying like we kind of have to leave Duren on an island, as good as Alperen Şengün is. And here's the other thing. I've said this about Luka. Because he's such a good passer, it leaves him in isolation situations to score because you don't feel like you can double him and turn him over. If they felt like they could double him and make him make a bad mistake, they would double him. But they know if you double Alperen Şengün, he's going to find the teammate that's open and he's going to hurt you that way.
Exactly right. I think they are so, so smart. And to me, this is Ime as much as anything. And I want to be very clear. Like, they did not always do this stuff last year. Like, it was part of the really frustrating things about the Rockets. Like, this is all very simple stuff. These were young players. It was a coach that was probably not quite a head coach. You know, he's an assistant on the Pistons now. Like, everybody loves Steven Silas around the league, thinks he's a great guy. But it's these simple kind of things here where I think Ime is drilled down into them. We're going to play five out basketball. We're going to have good spacing. And I think you're seeing now the effects of that and how it's created a circumstance for Alper and Şengün to be able to really lift his game and become like genuinely a borderline all-star. Like if he gets named to the all-star team, I'm not going to have a problem with that. He's averaging 21.7 points, 8.9 rebounds, 4.8 assists on 54% from the field. Look, I don't have a strong like opinion one way or another if he should make it over Chet, over Wemby. Like these guys are unbelievable bigs across the board. And then you look, you know, Rudy Gobert is in this mix. You know, I guess Karl Towns is in this mix. Jokic will obviously be there. You know, Domantas Sabonis, I think, will probably be there. Anthony Davis will almost certainly be there. Whatever you want to do with the Pelicans guys, because I would imagine that one of Brandon Ingram or Zion will be there. It's a loaded, loaded group. Jaren Jackson Jr. is in the West as well. Lauri Markkanen is there. There are so many great bigs in the West. I truly have not parsed through it all. I don't know who should make the all-star game out of all of those guys comparatively to one another.
But he's going to be on people's lists, Sam. Like when you guys, when you exactly start right. to make your list, Alperen Şengün is going to be in the conversation. My vibe is he probably gets left off, but there's going to be a lot of, with all due respect to Alperen Şengün, as much as I love Alperen Şengün, those type of comments. Yeah. And, you know, maybe that's as far as it gets this year, but I think that's a huge step forward for him.
Yeah, no, it really is. It really is. And I would expect he's going to make a few of these moving forward. Jabari Smith, I think this year has been really, really impressive in the leap that he has taken. This is something that we expected after Summer League, where he came in and was the best player in the two games that he played. I thought he and Tari Eason, I thought, just completely blew the doors off the place. He's averaging 13.5 points, shooting 47-40. It's 47-38, 84 from, you know, the line. And he was averaging 9 rebounds. And you know, the passing still isn't quite there, but everything else has just been so, so strong for Jabari, and they still find ways to get him the ball. Like in mismatches, I think he's been a little bit more aggressive recently at being able to find those mismatches and play at that level. Just a terrific, terrific season for Jabari Smith too.
Yeah, I mean, he's 54% from two. I like to see that in the most recent game against the Pistons. I made multiple notes about, you know, getting out in transition, offensive rebound, made a cut, did something off the bounce. You know, I always believed in Jabari's jumper. I thought it was a beautiful jumper. And, you know, going back and watching some of his shots from college, it just, I don't know that many guys have made me just go, oh my gosh, as many times as he did with some of his shot making. It was, you know, could he lower his hips and get you off the bounce and, you know, leverage that shooting ability into something more? And then I don't think the defense, he was a rookie. The defense wasn't quite what I think people thought it was going to be. And now that seems to be coming around as well. One other thing I want to say about Şengün, I have tried to watch for contact balance from players more and more. I think that's super valuable. Yeah. We'll talk about this with the prospect. We're going to talk about the end and Jalen Tyson, because I think he has this. Şengün, I feel like, has really good contact balance. He is much stronger than what I gave him credit for coming into the year. And that plays out in the isolations. It plays out whenever he runs pick and roll when he's rolling in a pick and roll. It's really important, and he really has it.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to point out about Şengün and Jabari Smith particularly, because they end up kind of being the bigs in like ball screen actions and in primary actions pretty regularly. I think that both of those guys, and again, this is a credit to them, it's a credit to the coaching staff, Ime Udoka, everybody there, it feels like they're really locked in on what the scout is in terms of what kinds of shots they want teams to shoot. Like, for instance, in that Pistons game, like when Isaiah Stewart would be the person screening and Alperen would be guarding, you know, as the big in the ball screen defense and drop, it felt like he would even do like sometimes like delayed doubles, like even after somebody like Fred VanVleet had gotten through the screen, because he was just like, you know what, like I would much rather Isaiah Stewart take a three than, you know, Jaden Ivey, whoever, you know, get a chance to get a shot at the rim, get a chance to blow by in some way, shape or form, get a mid-range jumper, et cetera. Right. They're good at like forcing, it feels like, mid-range jumpers. They're good at, it feels like they're just really locked into what they're trying to do and what they're trying to accomplish, I think, every time I watch them on defense.
And that shouldn't go undervalued because I don't think every team does that. And it's hard on an NBA schedule because you're playing back to back and, you know, all of those things and adjusting from one scheme. Not that maybe they're completely changing their scheme, but just how you're going to guard a guy. One other note I wanted to make, 53% of their points scored by players under 23. This was the highest in the NBA by far. So this goes back to how I started my thought process of I overcompensated with the Fred Van, like these free agent signings, like, oh, they're going for it and it's going to be a veteran led team with those guys take. No. This is still a young team led by young talent that's getting all the chances to succeed. There's a little bit of overlap, right? We've talked about it with Cam and Tade and Tari Eason and all that. They'll work that out. They'll get it. Amin and Amin's going to take a little bit of time. But I just, that was a very impactful stat to me that their young guys are still doing loads of their scoring. With that said, real quick shout out Jeff Green. This man is still putting definitely. In work night in, night out, has some highlight dunks. Like, shout out to him for still doing his thing at this point in his career. And I think providing some real value. Yeah, I mean, we talked about the hole at center and him having to play as a backup five, the minutes he does. But I mean, when he's been asked to do it, his 16 minutes a night, he's done an admirable job in what I've watched.
Yeah, 100%. Like, he's worked really, really hard. He's been good schematically, defensively as well. It feels like he's just limited, right? Because he's 6'8", 6'9", whatever he is.
Absolutely.
Tari Eason has missed some time here recently. I love the energy and aggression that Tari Eason gives every single game that he's on the court, every single minute he's on the court. He helps them play with, like, attitude, it feels like to me. If he could finish at the basket, I think he would have, like, real all-star upside. I'm not joking when I say this. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to be able to finish at the basket well enough to actually reach that ceiling. But my God, like, he is able to get to the rim. He's so aggressive attacking the offensive glass. If he could finish at the rim and then he continues along the trajectory he's on currently as a shooter, he's making 36% of his threes, almost all of them open. You know, again, like Pedro just brings this up, like, Tari just makes good things happen all the time. That's right. His presence is infectious. He is super valuable out there. I love watching Tari Eason. Please, Tari, whatever you can do, I just beg you, learn to finish at the rim. Like, if you can do that, the game changes, I think, for him in such a substantial way. Because you then really have to, like, pay attention to him across the board. Regardless, he's going to be like a, you know, top, he's going to be something in the NBA. Like, he's a starting quality player as soon as next season to me. And really, there's a case he is already with how he impacts the game as long as the shooting continues to hold at 36. You know, Fred VanVleet, we haven't talked about him a ton, but I think Fred has just been so steady and so solid. You look at the leadership as well. Like, when you watch Rockets games, they show a lot of clips of, you know, this is something that we talked about last year a lot on this podcast with Adam and things. Like, when I would watch the Rockets, it seemed like there was no accountability. There was no accountability. There was not the proper levels of accountability across each player. When you watch them now, it's Fred VanVleet going over, having conversations after breakdowns. It's Ime Udoka having conversations after breakdowns, trying to get guys in the right place, getting guys in the right frame of mind. Having Fred as, like, that on-court coach, I think, has been so, so, so important and valuable to them.
Yeah, culture matters, and he's been a huge part of it. The other thing is, like, he does it by example. He gets after it defensively. He has great hands. And he just, he'll dive on the floor. He'll take a charge. He'll do all these things you want your young players to do, but he's not just telling them. It's not just Ime asking them to do it. He's saying, look at your veteran culture setter, Fred VanVleet. Watch him do all of these things. Literally show you that he's willing to do it at this point in his, oh, there was another one where, just the epitome of, I love guards that get involved in the board, Sam. Like, I just love a guard that on the weak side is willing to make a rotation and get a box out or whatever. I think it was against the Cavs. He makes a weak side rotation and he gets in there and gets a old school box out on Jarrett Allen. And I'm just like, I love this. I love this about Fred VanVleet. And if Fred's willing to do it, then you know who needs to do that? Cam Whitmore. Like, Cam Whitmore starts winning on the margins by doing things like that, and then the Rockets really have somebody, because we all, you and I, believe he can score the crap out of the ball. If Cam Whitmore starts making weak side rotations for box outs, now you're talking about just him adding a whole nother level of value to your team. So I think having someone that shows that, that Ime can take the film and say, look what Fred is doing. Watch him dive on this ball in the fourth quarter. I think that's more impactful than just him just saying it. He's able to show it from kind of the culture setter of your team.
It's 100% right. You know what the most important, like, statistical changes for me with the Rockets this year? Do you know what they finished last year in turnover rate offensively?
So they're top 10 this year. Let's say bottom eight.
Yeah, they finished 29th last year in turnover rate on offense.
What an improvement.
Yeah, this year they're ninth. That is the Fred VanVleet.
That's awesome.
Change. That is the Fred VanVleet. So important to have somebody who can just be that guy for you. I think who can run the show, who consistently gets everybody the ball in the spots that they need the ball. I think he's been so, so valuable the entire way.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
Okay. We're not going to talk a lot about Cam Whitmore, Amen Thompson, and even Jalen Green. We talked a lot about them on the last episode that Bryce and I recorded, which is the Rookies podcast. I think we seriously talked about those guys for probably like 15 minutes. So if you want to listen to stuff on those guys specifically, I would say go back and listen to that episode, which I think we recorded on Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, right? Just a few days ago. Yep.
So go back, go listen to that if you want more in-depth takes on where we're at on those guys. And I'm ready to move on and talk about this Atlanta mess.
Let's do it.
The Atlanta Hawks are 15-23.
The fact you 27th
in defense, 8th in offense. It just continues to be much of the same, you know, structurally for Atlanta. It's just that now they're bad. And before they were like, okay, they started not great last season under Nate McMillan. And then they bring in Quinn Snyder. Quinn, I thought, really helped them kind of turn things around a little bit late last year. And just from a even shot like distribution perspective, it just looked cleaner. It looked better. The problem now for them is that it looks fine, but they still can't defend. And what is happening with this core defensively just very clearly needs like a shakeup. They bring in DeJounte Murray in order to potentially help the backcourt defense. I don't think he's been as good defensively in Atlanta as he's been in San Antonio. The off-ball, I think, effort has been just like a little bit lacking. You know, DeAndre Hunter, they draft him in order to like change their defensive scheme in some way, shape, or form, getting this big, long, 6'8" guy with a 7'2" wingspan who can shut down everybody. He's fine as a shutdown defender. Like, he's good, like, on the ball, one-on-one, taking on matchups. He just doesn't really help you in terms of being able to like limit the court in help situations. I don't think like he just isn't impactful or disruptive as an off-ball defender. I think Clint Capela this year seems to have taken a real step back. Like, he just looks a step slow and not quite as bouncy when I've watched him. He's dealt with like this Achilles thing for the last couple of years that seems to not be going away super well. You know, Bogdan Bogdanovich is having a great year. I think you can't really throw this at the feet of Trae Young, if I'm being completely honest. Like, I know that's a popular sentiment that Trae just can't be a winner, everything like that. I don't think that's the case this year. I think he's been awesome. You especially look like over the course of the last like couple of months, he, I think, has been absolutely outstanding. You look at his last, I don't know what you want to call it. Let's go with, you know, 25 games here. He's averaging 28.9 points, 11 assists, shooting 45, 38, 83. I think that, again, like the defense, it's not great, but it's not disastrous. It doesn't kill you. I don't know, man. It's hard. It's really, really hard for me to. I think they need to just like tear this thing down entirely around Trae and like try to rebuild it around Trae. And, you know, maybe if it doesn't work, you know, you consider moving Trey at some point, but like, I'm trying to rebuild this around Trey, and I'm trying to move everything else around him to make it work.
Okay. So that's what I was going to ask. What is the young core, like, or the core, not young core, but what is the core? Because to me, I think it's Trey. I also really like Jalen Johnson. So I think I would probably hold on to Jalen Johnson as well. And then I would figure out the rest of it, right? It seems like the DeJounte Murray thing has run its course and he's going to be moved. You know, what do you want to do with Sadiq Bey? Like, do you want to pay him this offseason? Yeah. A guy who I know people want to tag him as a 3-and-D guy. I don't think he's that great defensively. And he's only shooting 34% from three on 5.5 attempts. So, you know, while he does make shots, like, how valuable is that? And how much are you going to have to pay him there? The Capella and Okongwu thing is like, seems like Capella has run his course. Maybe you turn it over to Okongwu. There's just so many I like some of these individual pieces. That's what's weird to me with this team. Bogdan Bogdanovic, like, every time he's just putting up numbers, he's probably Sixth Man of the Year candidate if they're not, what are they right now, 15-23 and not even in the play-in. So I'm with you. I think Trey Young has been really, really good. I guess the other course would be you essentially trade off everybody. The other thing is you get past their top eight guys and they get nothing. AJ Griffin has only played in 15 games. Bufkin's played in two games. Like, none of these other guys, these recent draft picks, and I realize they've been trying to win, but you're getting nothing. So there's not even depth here to be excited about. So it would be really, really, I think it's time to do something. I lean towards you, but I imagine there's opinions out there that says, no, move Trey Young. And I mean, I guess then you're going full, break it down to the bare bones and getting rid of almost everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Sadiq Bey. Sadiq Bey, over his last 17 games, is shooting 27.9% from three. I mean, this is what Sadiq Bey does. Like, he's streaky. Yes. He goes through hot stretches.
Absolutely. Yep.
And, like, has great runs and then has some moments where he struggles. Yeah, look, you know, Corey Zanoni brings up retooling around Trey makes sense, but I'm pushing a trade of the Spurs agenda this trade season and offseason just for kicks. Honestly, I love the idea of Trey in San Antonio kind of across the board. Like, it gives Atlanta its picks back plus other stuff. Cause I'm sure that you could do that, which means Atlanta could enter like a full rebuild tank kind of situation. I think Trey would be incredible with Victor. I think that's like the ideal like way to make Trey work defensively is just have somebody cleaning up every single thing imaginable on the court with his court coverage. I think that that is a trade that makes an immense amount of sense to me across the board. I cannot imagine them doing that at the deadline. Like, I just do not think that that's a thing that they will go down. But yeah, I love the idea of Trey in San Antonio at some point for sure. Yeah, it's my guess is that they try and rebuild this around Trey at the, you know, at everything. At the deadline here, they move Bogdan, they move DeAndre, they move everybody and see what it looks like.
Do you think Trey gets a little too much hate at this point? Like, I've listened to some stuff recently where I'm like, I realize he has his flaws, right? Like, he's not Steph Curry. I get it. Trey Young is really good though. I feel like, and I think we talked about this maybe on the last episode or maybe a couple ago, to be the focal point of the offense the way he is and to take the usage he does. And I know the efficiency isn't great, right? 42% from the field, but 27-11 is still really, really hard to do. I'm not saying he's in the upper echelon of NBA players, but I think at some point the pendulum swings on some of these guys too much to where it's like, in a weird way, he's almost undervalued as a player, which seems kind of crazy to say.
Yeah, like Andre in the comments here says, like, guys, if a player can't elevate their team with a decent supporting cast, you're overrated. Trey isn't that guy. Look, I mean, Trey took them to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, he kind of did elevate his team at that point, right? Like, if you watch those games, it was him that was carrying them on offense. It was him that was kind of wrecking Joel Embiid and the Sixers and the pick and roll, right? Like, I kind of think that he does elevate his team. It's just that you have to have a very specific situation around him to make it work. And Atlanta, as of right now, does not necessarily have that. So, look, I think you're looking at like moving DeJounte Murray. Like Pedro asks, like, what do we think they're getting into the DeJounte trade? I think like a first rounder and a prospect sounds right to me.
Two real assets. Like that's the way I try to think of it. I mean, I know that's a little bit like, well, what does real assets mean, Bryce? But two real, like a real first round pick and then a real prospect, something like two real assets of some sort is what I would think with DeJounte. Real quick on Trey, too. There's a lot of guys that fall in. You need a really good context around them for them to like make a deep 100%. Run in the playoffs. There's very few guys where you can say, oh, just literally put whatever type of players around them and they'll make it work. Like a lot of guys need that. And Trey, of course, has his shortcomings. He's small. He's not that good defensively. The efficiency isn't always great, but he still has a skill set and abilities that not a whole lot of people walking around in the NBA have.
I think that's absolutely right. Someone asked about DeAndre Hunter's trade value. Is he a slightly negative value asset due to contract and injuries? I don't know what DeAndre would get in a trade. Like, just being fully transparent, like, I could see a team like Sacramento, if they miss out on some guys, going, hey, we'll do something like Harrison Barnes and a first round pick for DeAndre Hunter, thinking that DeAndre might be a value add comparatively on defense. Harrison has looked quite slow on defense this year, I think. And like, you can get off of the Harrison Barnes contract, which isn't a great deal. Like, I wonder if something like that kind of makes sense for both sides a little bit. He's one that I struggle with. Like, the two guys that I've struggled most with, I have a NBA trade deadline big board coming out tomorrow. Him and Terry Rozier were the two that I struggled most with. Cause Rozier, you know, has been, you know, amazing this year. He was not good last year. He was really good the 2 years before. He was not good the year before in Charlotte. So like, what do you do with all of that information? Plus another guy that has like dealt with some injuries, has 2 years after this one left on his deal at like 25.1 million or 25.5, maybe something like that. Someone brought up Austin Reeves in a 2029 pick for DeJounte. I cannot imagine Austin Reeves is getting moved in a DeJounte Murray deal. That seems aggressive to me.
The one that I keep hearing is, what if you add Bogdan onto that? So it's, you're not just getting DeJounte, but you're getting DeJounte and Bogdanovic. Then would the Lakers consider adding Austin Reeves?
That's interesting. It's more interesting. It's more interesting. Trying to find a way to make that money work is probably a little bit difficult, but yeah, that's more interesting to me.
Yeah, because now you have to add in like Rui or maybe you have to add in more contracts. And for the Lakers, that's going to be guys that are in the rotation as well. So,
yeah, that's right. The AJ Griffin aspect is so interesting. I have no idea what's going on with AJ Griffin.
Yeah.
truly, like, I have absolutely no idea what's going on there. I thought he was pretty decent last year under Nate McMillan. You would think, in theory, he makes a lot of sense for Quinn Snyder with the way that Quinn wants to space the floor and do things that way. Honestly, I can't really figure out what's going on with AJ Griffin. It's bizarre, but the entire situation in Atlanta is bizarre. Look, I think like you rebuild around Trey, Jalen, Kobe Bufkin, see the way it goes and then kind of go from there.
Yep.
So yeah, it's not ideal. Okay. Atlanta, I don't really have anything else to say to you.
Yeah. No, I'm good.
I'm also good on Atlanta. Next up is Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard has signed an extension with the LA Clippers. And there are like probably five guys in the league this year that like I have truly just so thoroughly enjoyed watching. In the NBA, Kawhi Leonard is undeniably on that list for me. He has been incredible this season. He has been absolutely like unfathomably good to me. It feels like he is so obviously, I think, one of the five best players in the league when he's playing like this and when he's right. And when he is physically just capable to stay on the court and stay on it for long. And that has been the case for him this season. He's had no problem staying on the court. I just love everything about what he has done this season. He signed a 3-year, $153 million contract extension. That is not the max that he was capable of signing for. He is going to make $52 million next year, and then a little bit over 50, I believe, over the course of each of the next 2 years after that. Doesn't have a player option. Does have a trade kicker to where, like, if he was to get moved, like, he'd get a little bit more money. This is a crazy contract to me for the Clippers to get a guy like this for the non-max. I mean, my God.
Yeah, this is a big win for them. And what is looks like the most games he's going to play, knock on wood, since at least 2016, 2017. He's right now having near career year in field goal percentage, 3-point percentage, all of these things, just playing incredible. I think a couple episodes ago we talked about, or some, I think you asked me, like, who's your favorite league pass team? Or maybe this was a different podcast I do. I don't know. But I said the Thunder. Crazy enough, Sam, the Clippers are really close behind that in terms of teams I enjoy watching. I think it must have been one where I was talking about the Pistons, because I said outside the Pistons, who do you enjoy watching play? Thunder is easily number one. But for not thinking I would enjoy watching a Harden, PG-13, Kawhi Clippers team, I love it. And I know this is the Kawhi segment, but I love what Zubac does, what Terrence Mann does, these guys off the bench, all of that. I'm really intrigued by the Clippers overall. And it looks like this is the first step of them keeping this core around for another couple years. They still got to do it with PG-13. James Harden, I don't think, can do anything until the offseason, but I would assume all of these things will happen. And listen, I think they're real contenders. I mean, we feel like we've talked about this. They're top four in the West right now, and they seem to be figuring it out. And Kawhi is a huge, huge part of that, as you outlined, playing some of the best basketball of his career and some of the best basketball in the league.
Yeah. Over his last 19 games, he missed like a quick little 4-game stretch in there, but over his last 19, he's averaging 27 points, 6.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.7 steals, shooting 57% from the field, 49% from three, 91% from the line. I mean, like, just look at this dude. Like, truly. I grabbed this from the Clippers social account, but like, it's the pure like fundamental polish, right? Like, he's just going to back this guy down and just like throw up this obscene, like big, like step fadeaway where he's wrong footed. And then he's going to turn in midair, realign his body in midair. Being able to make these shots is ridiculous. It is completely absurd. That's Jaren Jackson Jr., who is a 7'4" wingspan, who is like one of the two or three best defensive players in the league contesting this shot. And his release point is so high that not even Jaren can really contest it.
Yeah, I mean, if people don't, I don't mean to insult anybody here, but if you don't know how hard it is as a right-handed shooter to turn over your left shoulder in this situation and shoot, like, just go outside, go to the park, whatever, and do it over your left shoulder and your right shoulder, and see, it's just so much easier to go over your right shoulder. Like, it just feels much more fluid, and doing it over his left like that, and then you paused it perfectly a little bit ago with where his feet were completely misaligned, but now look where you have it paused, Sam. Look at his body and how he's able to get everything in line the way he does. It's just amazing. He's, look at his feet. That's how his feet are whenever he takes off. And then as he gets into the air, he's able to align everything and knock this down. This is an insane, with that contest, that's an insane shot.
This is the stuff where I say that he is the closest to Jordan that I have seen play since Jordan plays. It just stylistically, right? Like, purely in terms of style, being able to get to this shot, and like Kobe did this shit as well. Yeah, like, yeah. It's also similar with him. Like, you know, it's all of this. Like, he is so sick in terms of his way to be able to do that. It's really, really Kawhi is the closest, is the, like the next, he's the next guy, like in the Jordan, Kobe, Kawhi, like run of players to me. It's the polish, it's the simplicity with the way that he's able to do it all, despite all of this not being very simple. Like, this is, like you said, impossibly fucking hard to go up like this. This is where his feet are. It's just a jumper. Like, it's a mid-range jumper at the end of the day, but the complexity within that mid-range jumper is so ludicrous to me. And then this one here, it's the ability to string together moves like off the bounce, like three straight between the legs, get Concher just like very slightly off balance, right? Like, his ability to recognize even the smallest little steps, right? So he's going to recognize Concher's right foot just get like so slightly high here. He's going to see him go in the air a little bit. He's going to see Concher's right foot up in the air there. He's going to put it right back between his legs. He sees Concher like jump a little bit and get jump up in the air a little
just
bit.
Just a little bit. Yep.
That smallest amount is all that Kawhi needs. If you get even just the tiniest little bit in the air like that, he's so good at recognizing opposing players' momentum and their balance and where exactly he can go to get to his shot. And oh, by the way, this is what his footwork looks like on this shot. Again, going to his right, stopping, popping, getting realigned in midair, knocking that shot down. Just an absurd, absurd player who is worth every dollar, I think, for the Clippers. I get their injury concerns. And really, like, the disappointing thing for me is that, like, if Kawhi did not have these, like, knee, whatever it is, issues that he has, this is probably like a top 20 player of all time, if not more than that. I don't know if he's going to have the career where he's going to end up going down in that rung of players. Maybe if they win the title this year, it won't matter. Like, it might just be that, you know, this guy wins three finals MVPs and three titles for three separate teams where he's, you know, the best player on two of those teams. And it's just like, well, fuck, we can't do anything. Like, we can't tell this guy shit. Like, he is very clearly a top 20 player of all time. If that happens, like, I'm all for it. I have loved watching Kawhi Leonard as much as I have loved watching any player in the NBA this season.
So you just broke down all of his mid-range stuff. You want to guess what he's shooting from 0 to 3 feet so far through 34 games this year? From the rim to 3 feet via B-ball reference. I'll give you an over-under, Sam. Over-under 85%.
I would have said my number was going to be like 77%.
89%.
Yeah, that's like not so human.
So at the rim, and these are, you know, he is a mid-range operator, right? So he does a lot from 3 to 16 feet where he's over 50%, by the way, on, yeah, 48% of his shot attempts. Only 14% of his attempts are from 0 to 3 feet. I get it. It's not like he's just getting there. That percentage is insane. Like, that is ridiculous for someone to shoot that well at the rim. I also just love it looking his career trajectory of how many of his field goals were assisted early in his career and then just how he grew and progressed and got better. But then you also see this year, those numbers have ticked up a little bit where I feel like he's going, okay, I'll play within the context and the construct of this team as well. So shout out him for all of this stuff. Like, I think he's another player that at times, you know, I think we forget about a little bit just how good he is because of the injuries, and let's see it in the playoffs and everybody's just waiting for the next injury to happen. We got to appreciate while we're seeing it.
So I just did math real quick on, so he has 35 dunks this year.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Even if you remove the dunks, he's shooting 86% at the rim.
Yep.
He's shooting 86% at the rim on non-dunks.
Insane.
That's unbelievable. It's truly like unfathomably unbelievable that he's this good. The other thing I want to talk about with this is the way it could impact the deadline in the offseason. So Kawhi was one of the best free agents on the market. Paul George is one of the best free agents on the market, potentially. Has not signed an extension yet. Look, like, I'd imagine the Clippers are trying to run this back with these guys. And if you're going to sign Kawhi, it seems unlikely to me that you would not sign Paul George.
Correct.
So we'll see what happens there. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I'm kind of working under the assumption, rightly or wrongly, and this is not based on intel. I want to be clear about that, too, because I have to start saying that this time of year. I'm guessing that this leads to a Paul George extension.
Yeah.
So then you look at the rest of the free agency class. LeBron, in theory, but like, we'll see, right? I guess it's not impossible that LeBron leaves, but it seems unlikely to me. Pascal Siakam is a free agent. After that, man, like, it's hard to find guys that are like real, real difference makers. James Harden, but James Harden, you know, looks great right now for the Clippers, but looks great right now as a third guy, I think. Like, that's a big piece of why I think Harden has been great this year.
Yeah.
Klay Thompson does not look like a real, like, tried and true, like, max guy at this point. You know, Drew Holiday is a free agent after this year. We'll see what happens with Drew. Like, plausible that he could be like a real difference maker for somebody. He's looked good this year, not great, in my opinion. DeMar is a free agent. I think DeMar has looked really good this year. I don't know if DeMar is a max guy anymore. Tobias Harris is in this mix. Mike Conley, OG Anunoby, obviously, but like, we're assuming that OG is probably staying with New York at this point.
Yeah.
Jonas Valanciunas, you know, just kind of looking around like restricted free agency. It's that 2020 draft where most of the guys are already locked up. So it's like Pat Williams, Okoro, you know, Obi Toppin, like guys like that kind of. Sadiq Bey is in this mix. Precious. Maxey is a restricted free agent, but we're assuming he's going to, you know, stay in Philly, obviously. So basically, these teams that are, I think, looking toward the offseason to potentially improve, I wonder if they decide they have to move up their timeline a little bit. For instance, one team that has been trying to maintain its flexibility is Philadelphia. Philadelphia has been hoping, hey, nothing comes available, we can just have max cap space this summer and make something work that way. And again, variety of ways to use max cap space. You don't have to use it in free agency. You can use it in trades. Having said that, I wonder if the OG trade, the Kawhi extension, potentially a Paul George extension, if that comes soon, I wonder if that changes Philadelphia's calculus a little bit to where they decide we just have to make this move now and find a guy on the market that like really works for us.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be where they'd have to go, right? Is they find whoever pops at this deadline. I feel like the name that continues to come up and is going to is Siakam. I guess he would be the one, though, where maybe Philly goes, he's going to survive the deadline and just become like, surely Toronto's not going to let that happen, though, right? Like, they're not going to let him, they're not going to let the Fred VanVleet thing play out yet again. And so, Philadelphia is obviously the name that comes up here, right? In terms of they were going to be major players in the offseason. They have all of these expiring contracts, nothing on the books other than Embiid, Maxey, and I think Springer. But if there's nothing to spend, I mean, you can still swing a trade this offseason as well, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it seems like maybe they would be a little bit more inclined to try to make a move at the deadline. But what's the name other than Siakam, who you possibly could sign in the off? Do they get on? Does DeJounte make sense there next to Tyrese Maxey?
No, I mean, like, maybe it's like DeJounte, DeMar, somebody like that. But like, DeMar, again, yeah. Like, I don't love those ideas, if I'm being completely honest. Like, do you try and like, I don't think the Kings just like give away Kevin Huerter. Like, I think they're trying to use Huerter to go get involved in a similar deal to what the Sixers are trying to do. Yeah. Go get like a real dude. So yeah, I don't know, frankly. Like, maybe you go and just get like Bogdan Bogdanovich and do that, something like that, Maybe it's multiple moves. Maybe it's like Marcus Morris and a first for Bogdan, and then it's, you know, Robert Covington and X for and Jaden Springer and like a pick or whatever and something for DeJounte or something like that. Like, it's obviously both guys on the Hawks, but like, I'm just spitballing here. Maybe it's Bogdan and DeMar. I don't know. I'm just like it's going to be really interesting to see what they do.
Do you think they have to star hunt, quote unquote? I mean, you have Embiid, who's a top 3-5 player in the league, top three. You have Maxi, who's like borderline all-star right now. You know, is Maxi good enough to be the number two on a title contender? And then you just kind of build out. I'm not saying you just get like role players, but maybe you can be a little more specific with who you go and get around those two. Or do you still think they need a little bit more punch than the guys I'm talking about?
I think they need one more guy. Like, I think they need one more like real,
like dude.
Yeah. Kind of guy. Okay. Maybe they don't. Maybe they can just like go find like a, you know, look, Denver did it last year with Nikola and Jamal Murray when it was, you know, KCP, Aaron Gordon, and Michael Porter Jr. next to him. And like that's honestly, if I was them, the kind of model I would be building toward at this point is something like that. So going to get guys that accentuate your stars. And I don't know if DeMar does that. I don't know if, you know, Zach LaVine, I think, certainly doesn't do that. You know, DeJounte, I don't think DeJounte really does that for them, if I'm being honest.
Well, we've talked about him being next to high usage guys. It's not just that Maxi is, you know, handling the ball a lot. It's you run a majority of your offense through Joel Embiid. DeJounte may touch the ball less in Philly than he does in Atlanta right now, because he's at least kind of the second option in Atlanta just behind Trey. In Philly, again, it's Embiid's obviously the number one option, and then Maxi has the ball a lot as well.
Yeah, so I will be interested to see what Philly does. Maybe, like, honestly, maybe they do try and just like pay up for Alex Caruso or somebody like that and make him like the KCP, and they try and like,
what if you just brought in DeRozan and Caruso? Like, I know DeRozan may not be the best fit, but you bring in both of those guys. I don't know what they have, if they, you know, I assume they'd have the assets to go do that. And you bring Caruso, we've talked about it, insane contract. DeMar's on an expiring, so you can decide what you want to do with him. But DeMar's close to that level of a player, at least for a couple of years. Like, he's playing well right now. I think DeMar's still good, even though he's getting up there in age. And then Caruso does all of the things we've talked about with him.
Maybe. That might be a smart deal. That might be the one that like makes a little bit more sense for them. But again, that would require the Bulls moving Caruso. Yeah. And like all of the reporting is that they don't want to move Caruso. So, you know, who knows?
The Bulls are going to stand pat, Sam, because they're like ninth in the East right now. And they're going, hey, we're going to make the play-in tournament. We're going to keep all of this together.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Shout out Kobe White.
My God. Kobe White, we've talked about that recently. He has been great. Okay. Let's get into a little bit of draft here for 10 minutes.
Okay.
We want to talk NBA Draft Prospect of the Week. Jalen Tyson out of Cal. You are the NBA Draft Prospect of the Week. 6'7" wing, pretty good length. Like, looks like he has really like long arms. I would say, I don't know, +4, something like that. Like +5 or so wingspan. I'm just kind of spitballing, ballparking it. This is a kid that went to Texas as a top 35-ish recruit in the country. A guy that, frankly, like most scouts thought, would be a couple of years, but would be an NBA player eventually. He took a very circuitous route to get to where he is. Went to Texas, the whole beard thing happens, he leaves. Goes to Texas Tech after that, because originally he committed to Texas Tech under Chris Beard. When Beard decided he was going to go coach Texas, followed Beard to Texas. Then decided, you know, Dallas kid, I'm going to go back to Texas Tech, which is where I originally was recruited. Well, I go play for Mark Adams, and allegedly, reportedly, everything like that, Mark Adams made racist comments toward Jalen Tyson, which made Jalen Tyson decide to leave. So now we fast forward to this year. He leaves, goes to Cal. It takes like a whole process to get him eligible, where like there's a media push. like to say like, hey, like, what are we doing? Like, how is this kid not cleared yet to be able to play after what happened to him at Texas Tech? Gets cleared and he's been awesome at Cal, basically from the moment he got there under new coach Mark Madsen. I love what I've seen from Jalen Tyson this point. I mentioned at the top, I have a first round grade on him right now. I think he's a first round pick. I do. He's averaging 20.7 points, 7.3 rebounds, 3.1 assists, shooting 50.9% from the field, 37.7% from three, 80% from the line. Those are bonkers numbers, obviously. Yesterday against Oregon, they end up losing by 7. Cal is not a great team, but it's not a good fault.
Yeah.
He goes for 20 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists on 8 of 18 from the field. He's often just relied on to create so much for them. The game that really stood out, though, was the Colorado game earlier this week. He goes for 30 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists on 10 of 15 from the field, 7 of 7 from the line. Was just a monster in that game. Honestly, like, he had 2 assists, and like, the numbers, when you look at his assists, they don't pop. I think he can really pass. Yeah. Like, I think he reads the court super well. He finds like cross court kickouts, cross wing kickouts consistently. He finds little dump offs, little, like, you know, live dribble passes that he can make to be able to create for his teammates. They just don't make shots around him a lot of the time. I think Jalen Tyson is a stud. He has been awesome this season. What has been your opinion on Tyson?
Yeah, just real quick, he actually led California back to a win over Colorado in that game when they were down by 20. Yeah. So, you know, his team isn't very good, but he did bring him back in that. Yeah, I think he has really good feel passing. Not like a crazy creative ball handler, but I would just call practical usage. I think he does that well. I like his passing. He tries to move defenders with his eyes, all of that stuff. I'm interested, you know, he does a lot of like primary creating. You know, does all that stuff translate to an off the ball role that I think he'll have in the NBA? And then I talked about this earlier, strong physical driver. I don't know how else to say this. He has a low center of gravity, it seems like a strong base. He looks thick in his lower half, and that allows him to take contact when he's driving. When he gets to the rim and takes contact there, he plays angle. He does have some stuff to his handle. I think the shot is interesting. It like gets to the top of his head. He almost pauses and then he shoots it. But at the end of the day, the numbers say that this kid can shoot. The 3-point percentage is good and the free throw percentage is good. And then when he does play off the ball, he's done some cutting and offensive rebounding. So offensively, I really, really like his game, his body, those type of things. Defensively, I don't think he's been great, but he has such a high offensive usage. He strikes me as a player that will be better defensively when that scales down a little bit.
So a couple of different notes to piggyback off of there. You mentioned the shot, like, that you don't love the shot. I think the shot's fine. Like, yeah, you're right. He does have the little pause at the top, but he elevates into it. It's a very high release point as well. Additionally, he gets to it. You know, look, I'm going to bring up the name Kawhi Leonard. He's nowhere near Kawhi Leonard, but like, he gets to the shot from a wide variety of footworks in a similar way. Like, he does not need to have his feet aligned to the rim before he shoots. He can both get to a step back going toward his left, like most guys that are right-handed shooters can.
Way easier.
And he can also shift gears with his handle and like get the ball, you know, going to the right and drift into those shots to the right really, really well. I think that shot versatility is a really, really important factor when looking at if he's going to translate as a shooter, as a potential relocator, creator kind of situation. The thing that I worry about, like, not a great athlete, obviously, like, not a explosive dude, although has had some like awesome dunks. Like, there was one that I shared with you. I was like, this is one of the best plays I've seen all season.
Yeah.
He takes an empty side ball screen from Fardos Amak, like, splits the empty side ball screen, and then like euros into a dunk, like, all over somebody against Colorado. And I'm just like, what in the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah.
Can get up and like do some stuff, but he's just like not overly quick. Like, it's slower twitch in terms of, you know, it's not accelerating. It's not sudden. It's more just like very technical and very polished, and he can string moves together at a really, really high level as well. I love that he recognizes mismatches at a really high level. He like will go onto the block and like post up smaller guards sometimes and use that high release point to score. I think he's like he is a first round pick to me, like when I watch him.
Yeah. I mean, I had his name come across a couple months ago. I got him on my board, you know, and all of that stuff. He slowly moved up, and people started talking about him a little bit more. So I tried to catch some more games, and some of this stuff gets a little easier in conference because you can watch him against Colorado, where you can scout three other, you know, NBA draft prospects in the same game, and Simpson, Williams, and Da Silva. And so I've watched more recently, and he's just been really good. And he's been good against really good teams. You know, that's the other thing. It's not like he just killed non-conference bad opponents. Like, he's been good in Pac-12 play against some good competition as well.
So let me piggyback off of that while you mentioned that. In his last six games, he has played Arizona, Arizona State, USC, UCLA, Colorado, and Oregon. Of those teams, I would say Arizona, Colorado, and Oregon are the three teams that are like pretty good potential NCAA tournament teams. Colorado and Arizona, certainly NCAA tournament teams. In those games, he is averaging 22.8 points, 7.8 rebounds, shooting 55% from the field, 45% from three, 82% from the line, 2.3 assists, two steals, does have three turnovers, so it's a negative turnover, but 65.3 true shooting percentage over those six games against what I would say are like good teams, like USC, like whatever you want to say. Like, USC is a fine defensive team, at least. Like, they can't do anything on fucking offense, but like, they are a fine defensive team. UCLA is a catastrophe. Arizona State has been kind of messy this year, but like, those are real teams that he's playing, and he has been as productive as anybody in the country this year. This is a long wing.
Yep.
I think defensively, like, I agree with you. He's not been awesome on that end. He shows flashes, and they have him guard like tough guys. Like, he guarded Tristan Da Silva for like a big portion of that game against Colorado. So I'm a fan. I really like what I've seen from Jalen Tyson.
Yeah, he's really excited. I'm excited to continue to watch, although I feel like I have a pretty good handle on who he is as a player. And yeah, I mean, I think having him at 25 is very reasonable. That's where I have him right now. I don't know that he climbs any higher than that, but I mean, like you've said a couple times, he is a first round pick.
I think there's a non-zero chance he's a lottery pick in this class. I don't quite have him there right now, but I think that like when you look around this class and what it is, I think there is a non-zero chance he ends up being a lottery pick.
I could see it continue to climb. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Bryce, we got out of here. We got you out on time.
Yep.
Tell the people where they can find your work. Tell the people what's going on.
Yeah, real quick, at Motor City Hoops on Twitter, and then the Pistons Pulse podcast if you want to listen to Pistons stuff. And yeah, that's it. Always enjoy this. Sorry I had the heart out. We had some other things, but I do got to get to some other stuff here this evening, some other work I got to do. So always enjoy it, Sam, and appreciate everybody. Hit like, subscribe, rating, review, all of that stuff.
Go to The Athletic, keep me employed over there. We will be back later this week with more. I'm probably going to try and do awards later this week at some point for midseason. We will see how it goes. But until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.